Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Helgeson comes in first. Oh, it's a goal!
And the boom! Sensational! And it's there by Dickens. Delay! Joel Petrol again! Would you believe it?
Welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name's Tom Botell and I'm joined by Jordan Weimer once more. Again, there's no Matt. He's getting the Ryan Andrews treatment for another week. Jordan, how are you? How was your weekend, sir?
Yeah, doing very well. As you said, the numbers indicate Matt's got to stay out for at least one more game.
He'll
be back in no time, I'm sure.
That's it, absolutely. In the meantime, the fans are clamouring for him as we fool around at right back between us. Oh dear. So, 1-0 win at Rotherham United. It wasn't a classic, it wasn't pretty, and it feels like a lot of the themes that came up after this one, I have to admit, I've only seen the highlights, I was at another match on Saturday, are a bit of a rinse and repeat of the same old topic. So I'm going to go straight to the point and say and ask you this. If you were in charge, you're not Gino, you're not Scott, you're not prejudiced by what we know of them and how they work, you're the owner of this club, you are yourself. Do you stick or twist at this point?
With the head coach?
I'm
sticking. You know, I think that there have been some issues, obviously. You know, it's not been perfect, of course. But what I will say is there's been a lot going on, a lot for the head coach to deal with, a lot of deficiencies in multiple areas. You know, some relatively chaotic behind the scenes things. You've got some player issues, personnel issues, power issues above him in the recruitment side of things, technical directors and so on. It's an extremely difficult place to be a head coach at. And I think considering that, considering what he's had at his disposal, I don't think he's doing badly at all. There are things he could do better on. I think he's obviously should be, he should be open to a level of criticism. I don't think he wouldn't be. I think he could probably admit himself there are things that have been done perhaps incorrectly or with hindsight could have been done differently. But, you know, he's keeping the team competitive, which has a lot of positives, but also a lot of negatives too. It's a very imbalanced situation for him to work with. So, you know, I think there's been a recent run of this recent kind of run has been a little bit demoralizing, I think, for the fan base. But I do think that if we were to, you know, try and twist, we could find ourselves really kind of understanding what job or what a good job under the circumstances Ismail is currently doing.
Okay, good, fair enough. So I asked you that because we had a few questions in last week that we didn't get around to that all kind of pertain to the manager's situation, head coach's situation, and another one as well today. So I thought it was quite interesting because they all kind of span different sections of the scale, I suppose, on that front. So first one here from Nick at Nick Core. The question I really want to ask for the next one is why you think our support seems to be so quick to turn on the manager and the team. Is it just that we've got used to the Pozzo fire and hire and fire, or are all fan bases like this? What do you think? And then I'll chip in as well.
I think there's an element that we've been conditioned to that somewhat, yeah. I think there is. I think it's hard to not think of that as a factor. I think also, too, we know that it's an option, an option that seems viable to the ownership, so it seems something that could be a likely possibility to change things. We've had some success in doing it, obviously, in the past, but when it felt more regulated, more controlled with a plan, I think in recent years it's been almost, you know, pretty disastrous when we've done so for the most part. So I'm not entirely sure that it's something we should do or shouldn't, but it's one of those things that I think the fan base just become very used to. Yeah. I don't know, it's tough though. I think there's also an element of you know, we talked about it before, but just the easier thing to change, isn't it? You know, you can't strip out the squad, you can't do all these things, and you want to just kind of roll the dice. And it feels like we're at that point where it's just, you know, rolling the dice over and over again, which I don't feel any comfort in personally. But no. What about you?
I quite agree, and I think you hit upon the key thing there. It's the easy thing to change, isn't it? We know we've got a thin squad, so it's not even like you can go, you know, reach into the recesses of the squad and go, who's completely out of the picture that might come in and change it, or who's injured and working their way back. Really, the only one that might change it in that respect, and we'll come on to him, of course, is Emmanuel Dennis. The squad is fit by and large. Bio's obviously got a little injury as well, but that's it. It's the easy answer, and I do think there's a kind of football societal aspect to it as well, that we just see teams other than Watford and fan bases other than our own make changes, call for changes. You know, look at today's news, Michael Beale leaving Sunderland. He was very, for different reasons, but very unpopular from pretty much the word go when he replaced Tony Mowbray, and he's out after 9 weeks in the National League. Eastleigh appointed their third manager of the season today, and I'm sure there are plenty of other examples up and down the country of clubs, not just our own, that make changes fairly frequently, but we just kind of feel it more. We just feel it more, don't we? I think there's a big part of that.
I think also we don't get great access to understanding where the head coach is, or where the head coach sits in the hierarchy of things. We've been told there's more power allocated to the head coach this year, and we've seen some things to indicate that, but we don't really know how comfortable he is or isn't. So it kind of changes the feeling of whether, we don't really know how likely it is or not as much as we did previously, perhaps, which maybe plays into it somewhat. But
that's a really good point, actually, isn't it? The fact that he's part of this recruitment and they've given him kind of more say than anyone else, does that give him a level of insulation that perhaps others just haven't had when they've been the head coach and that is it?
Potentially, and it's tough to say. And you know, the involvement he has in recruitment, I find really difficult, because I don't feel at the beginning it felt like it was an addition. You know, like it was just a way to include the head coach more, and I thought it was weird we had to articulate that. I wouldn't really think that he'd be given too much more power than what we normally would, but now it almost feels like somewhat of a necessity, because we have really trimmed down that team that's, you know, looking towards building a squad kind of longer term. Apart from Ismet, I mean, if you look at who's involved currently in that department, it really, Ismail is kind of the longest, by contract situation, kind of the longest term fixture in that sense, isn't he? You know, he's the one with the 5-year deal. Nani, don't anticipate being there. I know Giretti just signed a new contract. It was a relatively short-term contract, but that happened. Manga's gone. So really, you're looking at Ismail as being potentially one that's having more of an influence as the longer from the perspective of a longer-term picture, which is, you know, the complete reversal of where we've been with head coaches before. And you know, we've talked about it here, I'm not a massive fan of a head coach having a huge say in the individual that he wants. I think, you know, being clear and presenting what he needs in terms of characteristics and, you know, different profiles of player, but you know, going out there and identifying, we know how much work he does. There was a video the other day just of him saying how he's at the training ground from 5 a.m. till 6 p.m. a lot of the time. You don't need to throw him watching multiple games and, you know, players that may or may not sign, let alone trying to find and identify these players. We're not, you know, recruitment's not a thing of just thinking about the players you're already aware of and looking at them a little bit more. You've got to kind of unearth these guys and look in these different markets. We're a team that looks in lots of different markets to try and bring players in. Ismail's not got time for that, really. He should be just able to be presented with a, you know, a short list of guys and a package in front of him to go over and kind of assess himself and give his input and see what he thinks of the player. That's fine, but you know, hopefully that's what we're doing. So it's a very difficult situation. Again, it kind of comes down to that lack of real clarity and understanding exactly how things are structured at Watford right now.
No, absolutely right. So the next question on this kind of sliding scale of support for the manager comes from Alan at Hemel Horn at 1881. Why do you think a lot of our fans think that if you criticise the manager, you're automatically backing the Potsos? Why can't you be allowed to have a balanced view and not want Val sacked, but still think he's got a lot to answer for? And actually, before putting the running order together today, I tweeted something a little bit kind of similar to this yesterday from my own account about the kind of binary nature of this. I'll posit my theory and then you can jump in, which is social media being the echo chamber it is, and the kind of, you know, 24-hour rolling news, all these news sites, people covering Watford, websites covering Watford, whatever, generates a constant need for more and more extreme views, and we'll come on to one in a minute, such that it no longer becomes enough to be balanced. You have to be, you know, go the other way, I think. And I tweeted that it's fine to want Ismail to stay but Potso to go. It's fine to want Ismail to go and Potso to stay. It's fine to want both of them to go. It's fine to want both of them to stay. There are, you know, myriad different ways of supporting your team and different views to take on how things are run. I don't think it has to be a case of this means that and that means the other. It can be exactly what kind of, you know, configuration you want, and that extends to how you support your team as well. I think the other thing, and I always say, I always manage to squeeze it into every episode one way or another, but I think you've also got to take into account that Twitter, you know, the Watford Twitter sphere, there are certain voices and names, and I recognise them, that kind of come up more loudly than others. They've got bigger followings, they get served to your timeline regardless whether you follow them or not. You know, that alone is only representative of a small proportion of the Watford fans on Twitter, and that Twitter following is only representative of a certain portion of Watford fan base overall, but it is representative in some respect. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, those are good points, definitely. I think for me, it also comes down to a lot of the time an oversimplification of the issues themselves. You know, if you kind of come down on one side or the other too stringently, I don't think it's a black or white issue right now. I think it's very much a lot of grey area. So if you really look at it with and take some time to look into the reasons as to why these things are happening or aren't happening, it's hard to come out with it without having questions from all areas, and, you know, maybe feeling some positive and negatives across the board. It's not really sitting on the fence, it's just trying to have like a well-rounded understanding of what's going on. So I think most people that do take the time to like educate themselves, and I know Alan's one of those as well, but, you know, having that interest and that kind of understanding, or at least trying to put yourself in those different mindsets and looking at it from multiple perspectives, gives you a little bit more of a balanced view. You know, as you said, you can criticize this man. I think we have, we've maybe been a bit more positive than some, but, you know, I think for the most part, you know, you can see the problems. You should definitely be able to discuss it, and there have been issues. But these aren't, it doesn't make him irredeemable. You know, these aren't write him off. But we can as I said, in terms of simplification, we can easily just kind of boil it down, and we've seen plenty of people say, "Oh, Ismail's shit," you know, and that's just it's such a reductionist view. There's no description of, it's just, you know, just stating their opinion without any reasoning behind it. Well, okay, that's fine, but is that really a reason to sack him because a few people think that, or the opposite, or think he's great? Well, you know, you can provide some reasoning if you really want to argue that. You know, I think also that the Potso situation itself has become so divisive. You know, he's such that hot topic that people become associated with a side of that with that debate, and they just really kind of nail down on that and don't really shift a lot of the time. You know, you see people that want him to stay, and there's some really strange comments in regards to the positives as you know, what he's done for the club, and I've seen some weird tweets just, you know, discussing or saying that we should be looking at this as a reason he should stay, without getting into specifics, and I've been pretty vague. But the point is, when someone is on such a strong side of it, most of the time it's not particularly reasoned. If it is, then that's, you know, you can entertain the argument at least. There's some explanation or some kind of showing of the working, showing of the work, how you got there. Maybe there's just not enough of it. Maybe that's part because Twitter is a kind of short tweet, kind of back and forth platform. But, you know, it's not always. But it's a good question. I think it's one that people have to be more sympathetic of, people that have differing but also mixed opinions. It doesn't have to be so one way or the other.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree. I think you've nailed it there. So the final one on this kind of topic, and we've been sitting on this one for a couple of weeks, just waiting for the right time to bring it up, because we do try and put all these questions to the floor. Comes from Rupert at Uncle Ron Senior, and I'm sure you can imagine, you can kind of guess which direction this is one's heading in. Why should the horrendous owner mean that Ismail must be back regardless of his public statements, such as saying that it's he who wanted a small squad, his complete refusal to play a front two, the dire home form, and the wretched style of football? I think the examples there are not things that we need to go into. Those are just things that Rupert takes umbrage with. But I think that's the kind of more extreme end of the scale, saying because the owner is bad, Ismail must be back regardless. Not necessarily the case, I don't think. I think a lot of people, you know, would separate the two and say these are the reasons that I am personally backing Valerian Ismail, and these are the reasons that I am personally pro or against Pozzo. But what do you make of that one? It's the eternal debate, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as Rupert starts off there, you know, talking about the owner, and I think with Ismail, the difficulty with judging head coaches, as we've said before, is always there's so much of their work, so much of their influence and input goes on behind the scenes, and we get to see very little of the work they do. We get to see some of the outcome, but we don't always get to see the external factors that are applying that pressure, both positively and negatively, on the coach, on the coaching staff as a collective. What we do know is we have, as Rupert said there at the beginning, we do have an owner that can be very difficult to work with and also put you in some really difficult situations that we don't always hear about. So I don't think Ismail should be absolved from any sort of comment or kind of criticism, or, you know, positive, or, you know, or even just positive feedback or negative. But I think to diminish or to underestimate the amount or the impact that Gino can have on the managerial situation, it's not really going to get you the full answer. I don't think that if we had a different coach, they would be able to deal with the circumstances much better. In terms of his, like, you know, there are times where he said things which I find strange. You know, I think the thing about the small squad, I think, is a little odd. I don't necessarily take it from him as a diplomatic response to save his job, which I think maybe Rupert does more kind of feel that he's a bit of a yes man, which I've seen a few say the same thing. And, you know, I don't have direct proof that he's not in that capacity. My interpretation of it is a little bit more about protecting the group of players that he's got currently, as opposed to you know, calling out and saying how kind of thin his squad is. I think everyone knows that. I think in private conversations there's a good chance that he'd be kind of fighting that corner. I know for a fact they wanted more reinforcements, that the coaching staff wanted those players brought in the summer and January. So what he says in the media situation, we know with any head coach, no matter how honest you claim them to be, the thing they say to the media is not always going to be 100% their viewpoint. There's going to be nuance there that you have to kind of interpret how you can. But yeah, what about you?
No, I agree. I think that's a really good point. The you know, what they say externally versus what they say internally, it creates far more of a story and far more of an unsettling kind of situation if he comes out and says, yeah, I'm really pissed off, we didn't sign X, Y, and Z. And, you know, we've seen it with Watford head coaches in the past, haven't we? Was it Marco Silva was pretty Mazzari. Chippy about not getting. Oh, was Mazzari as well? Was pretty chippy about both, not getting what he wanted. Somebody else as well. Was it Ivic who was fairly routinely used to complain that he hadn't been given what? I may be misremembering that, but there was another one in that era that wasn't particularly successful or diplomatic. You know, there's a difference, and also I think, you know, you look at people like Harry Redknapp. You know, he's one of the first to come out and just shoot from the hip wasn't he? And he obviously had a long and very successful managerial career, but I don't think it did, you know, the players or kind of his relationship with the hierarchy at some of the clubs he managed any good when he would come out and say, oh, you know, we're down to the bare bones, we need players, putting two goalkeepers on the bench to prove a point and stuff like that. Sometimes you do have to just toe the party line a little bit, which, as you say, I think is probably what, you know, Rupert's accusing Ismail of doing. But I think there's a bigger kind of picture at play there. But there's no, just to wrap up, there is no kind of obligation to back him just because the owner has done things that we disagree with. And I think, you know, for all our differences, Rupert and I, and all the times I quibble with him on Twitter, I think we both are fairly aligned in the fact that we want a change of ownership. But I think I would say, taking a step back and looking at the whole piece, there is more good than bad under Ismail if you just look at the football side of things. And I'm, with everything we've gone through to this point, I'm comfortable with that. Will it be enough to, you know, sate me forever? No, but for the time being, I'm okay with it.
I also just don't think in that specific situation, I don't think Ismail complaining publicly does anything towards improving the situation of the squad. I think if you're weighing it up and saying, you know, what's the pros and cons? Well, you know, pros, you might please a couple of fans that feel the same, or, you know, a couple of fans is maybe not fair. You might please the fan base by saying publicly what they're thinking. But, you know, what does that do to the, are there negative impacts in the squad? You know, potentially there are. Ultimately, that's the most important thing to him. And I think that's one thing we have to give him credit for. And again, it's anecdotal. We don't have the direct evidence. But even just from stuff that I and others that I speak to have heard, you know, there is a level of consistent opinion that things do feel better within the camp, which I think we can't underestimate how much of a negative that was. Whether that's just one thing we had to solve, there are bigger things we have to solve that are yet to be unsolved, but it doesn't take away from the fact that it is something that has improved and has changed. So, you know, it's tough, and this is why it's so hard to analyse, it's so hard to judge, and it's so hard to have a real solid opinion on when things are working and when they're not, because we're making these judgments based off, you know, very varied and hard to, you know, information that's hard to come by at times. So it's a tough one. Like, I have sympathy for everyone that I see arguing a lot of the time on Twitter and so on, because you know that everyone's kind of coming into it with the ultimate feeling they want the club to do well, and just have different ideas of what's causing it to struggle right now. That's all it is.
I think as well, and spent longer on this than I meant to, but it's a debate worth having. The reset that we were kind of promised prior to this season, you know, for the 22-23 season, didn't really happen. It's happened, albeit kind of, I think the hand has been forced somewhat, but it's happened this season. And we've knocked so much of how it all works and how the team works and the club works down. It isn't going to happen overnight. You know, you can't, Rome wasn't built in a day kind of attitude, to, you know, to apply a cliche to it. It's taking time. So if the success of this season is that the squad is smaller and younger and hungrier and wants to be here, which Duxbury said, I think, didn't he, for the first time, everybody wants to be here. And Ismail is judged almost as much on rebuilding the culture, resetting the culture, discipline and a style of play, and that in and of itself is a separate debate. Then, and the football kind of, you know, obviously has to come out above all else in importance, but the football is also, you know, a part of that, then I think that can be a successful season for us in the circumstances. But obviously a lot of this happens behind closed doors, and, you know, some people have got good sources and know things. A lot of us, myself included, do not have good sources behind the scenes to know if that sort of thing is happening and if that work is happening. We just have to take it from a very small kind of window on a Saturday or a Tuesday, don't we? So it's a lot of guesswork as well.
It is a lot of guesswork. And, you know, I think it's fair to say we should all go in very sceptical with anything we've been told for the remainder of this ownership.
Absolutely.
You know, we've had faith at times. You know, he had the benefit of the doubt for a while, and now we're at a stage where he doesn't. So, you know, I'm personally not confident there's any sort of rebuild going on. I don't think we're able to commit so fully to something which feels so costly in the short term. You know, we saw how quickly we moved away from the Edwards situation and even the Manga situation too. I just don't think we really have the stomach for it. So I don't believe we will do that. I think we're kind of going to be coasting a little bit and just trying to keep our heads above water for a while, unless there is some big change, whether that be change of ownership directly or that it be a sufficient level of investment which gives you that confidence that it could be a little bit more, a little bit quicker in terms of rebuilding things and turning things around. Because at the moment we are a bit of a cruise ship turning around, you know, we're not the most light on our feet in regards to how long it's going to take to put us in a very different situation, especially when you look at, you know, parachute payments dried up, assets, saleable assets. You know, you look at this, you look at 12 months from now, where are those saleable assets going to be? A lot of that's depending on the recruitment that comes in this summer, and you know, that potentially being something you can sell on. But I don't think many of us have a great deal of faith that we're able to identify these players like we have been able to in the past.
No, you're absolutely right. Well, moving on then from the bigger picture to the more the less important stuff, the 1-0 win over Rotherham at the weekend. Was this a case of simply a case of just getting the result and getting the win and stopping the rot after a few pretty poor weeks for performances? Yeah. Results rather than performances.
Yeah, I think it wasn't a great game. It wasn't a great game, obviously. I've seen quite a lot of negativity around it. You know, I think I get there's a little bit of frustration. I think it's another not great performance, which doesn't help. But what I will say in the positives, it was a bad pitch, bad conditions, tough team to play against in that environment. I think it was not ideal circumstances. The weather wasn't great either, which sounds a little bit soft, but it's a factor. Having said that, you know, there were some performances of the players as well. I think the back line as a whole, I thought even Tom Dalibashiru included in that. Even at times, Jamal Lewis, but the two centre-back.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewellery from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And also Siriata in midfield, I thought, put in a really good effort. They were quite determined and dogged throughout, which, you know, I think we've lacked in previous years, definitely. So I appreciate that aspect of the performance. Obviously, the finish as well from Espria, you know, really, really good. And it was that little bit of quality that made a difference. So, and also the fact that we won. So, you know, it's not all bad. It wasn't an amazing performance, but there are positives to take from it. Having said that, again, there are some concerning aspects that have just kind of continued on for the last few games, really, which you can't eradicate that either. They're definitely there, and areas need to be addressed, I think.
No, absolutely. Let's start with one of the changes that we saw, Sierralta coming into the team and playing at the base of midfield. Was this just a case of resting Livermore, and how did he get on?
I think it was. Yeah, no, I was wondering, you know, I saw it prior to kickoff, I was thinking, okay, is this an attempt to to kind of change our approach and make a tactical change to look at, you know, holding the ball a little bit more, not just holding it, but being a little bit quicker in possession through the middle. Sirialta is not the perfect fit, but I was really impressed with him early on, how he was able to occupy that role and give you a decent tempo. His positioning is good. In terms of receiving the ball, it's better than Jake in that area. Getting onto it quickly and playing through the lines is quite good at. So I was hoping that maybe it was a little bit of a shift in that regard. I don't think it was. I think it was most likely down to fitness and rotation. He brought some of that to the game, but it was very much, or it was closer to what Livermore offers you. You know, he was quite solid, actually. I think he did quite well. He bounced the ball nicely in there. He was winning fouls. You know, he wasn't just losing the ball. He was making sure he kind of could retained it for as much as he could. I thought he was absolutely fine. As I said, off the ball, he worked really hard. You know, he's not the most mobile. He looks awkward in space, but he's still doing the job. And you know, credit to him, he is getting involved. He's getting back in the box. He's winning headers. He looks very. What I will say about Serie A today is you can tell he feels the responsibility of the position. He looks very switched on. He's really trying his best, and I respect that he's doing pretty well in there when called upon. So yeah, I was quite pleased with his performance, actually.
Good. 13 of 15 defensive actions were successful. That's probably the upside of that. And then 11 out of 22 passes completed, which when he only completed three forward passes, rather suggests a bit of wastefulness there. But yes, probably the game to bring him in for, right? Big lump again in a physical game against a Rotherham team that are struggling, poor conditions, poor pitch, as you say. He, not that Livermore isn't physical, but I think he gives you something else and can probably, you know, spend a bit of time dropping in to help out defensively as well. On the subject of big lumps, we've done poor old Mileta Rajovic has a seamless link to death. What really seemed to get up supporters' noses on Saturday listening to Do Not Scratch Your Eyes Twitter space was his inability to win his aerial duels. About 50% of them he won, by the looks of it, varying different stats out there, or different figures for that particular metric out there. What's this down to? Is this a technical thing? Is this a timing thing? Physicality, confidence, all of the above? Is it something that can be coached, or is he just absolutely crap in the air for a long, tall chap?
I mean, it's all about... I think the biggest thing with Mira Vajovic is... He's just not a good athlete at all, and it's such a shame. He doesn't have any burst. He's not got any power. He doesn't have the speed. Doesn't have the mobility. Doesn't have the strength. He's just kind of a bit awkward and gangly, and it just doesn't really work. You know, there's a few occasions where, you know, if you look at the individual actions, you look at the headers. It's not even just kind of long balls forward that he's not being able to jump up for, and the centre back's got the advantage and jumps through him. There's times which, you know, a throw-in, for example, and he's got his back into the centre-back and he just gets brushed aside. There's just no contest. He's kind of leaning into the centre-back and the centre-back just kind of takes the lean and gets a foot in and the play continues. So, you know, aerial duels is one thing, but just all physical duels, I feel like he's just second best off. And, you know, he doesn't make up for that lack of physicality and the lack of use of his size with, you know, that quick, sharp burst to get away either. There's one occasion, again, where he kind of had the opportunity to get through, and you just know he's not going to make it. And you can have the technical ability and the skill can elevate you above lack of physical assets, but he doesn't really have that either. So it's tough, you know. In terms of actual heading, he's a good header of the ball when it comes to getting shots away. He's got a good eye for goal. He's got good instincts. He knows how to get a shot off, and he's quite good when you get the ball to his feet in those positions. Obviously, but man, the rest of his game is just it's unfair to him. I feel like he's playing at a standard that's just too high at this point, and you know, maybe he can adapt to it, but he's not looking comfortable to me at all.
Obviously, we're a little bit, we're stuck for now, right? He's one of two out and out strikers at the football club. The other one is injured. We're out of the transfer window. What do you think his future in terms of Watford, you know, where does it point? What happens this summer? Do they try and move him on for good? Do they loan him out? Or do they stick completely? What do you reckon?
I don't know. I really don't know. I would love to ask Val what he, you know, what he actually thinks of him. I'm not entirely sure. you know, if we loan him out, it's just a temporary solution until we can actually sell him. I think that just, you know, shows our intention to get rid of him permanently. If we can get rid of him permanently, we might, especially if there's an offer that comes in that, that for some reason gets us more. If people are just kind of not doing the homework and seeing the goals he scored, they might think it's worth a go and perhaps put a bit of a bid in. But I don't really see a future. You know, if I was the head coach now, I'd be looking at alternatives already. You know, I understand there's maybe reasons why Dennis didn't play this game. Perhaps the poor performance he put on against Norwich when he came off the bench. But I'd be looking at other options. You know, I think that we've got better striking options that are playing different positions in the pitch right now. We're moving these players around too much, and we've got lots of square pegs and all that. But I just don't think he offers you enough, and I think it will cost you games. And I think a different striker in that team would have perhaps given you that opportunity to make this more of a comfortable win. Not necessarily because they're going to be a better threat in the box and the ball gets to them, but we're not even creating these opportunities for Rajovic often enough, so we have to find ways to be flexible. And he just really doesn't. He is carrying a body at times, and it's very difficult to compensate for. I don't know. As I said, I feel bad for him, and it's a tough one. But you know, I think next year, I think striker is going to be it's probably going to be the biggest position of need. Doesn't it? In a lot of ways, yeah, I think so. And you know, you have something returning in Shaq Ford potentially, but Rajovic, I don't know. It's just another indictment of how scattered and random and, you know, potentially poor our recruitment has been recently. So yeah, I don't know. I wasn't
that's the thing.
Confident on that.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? When you think how little money we spent, relatively speaking, this summer, he was the big outlay, even if he is cheap in the scheme of kind of championship strikers. So you're putting a lot of your eggs in that basket, and to get it so badly wrong, really, really, you know, I'm not saying we need to know who did it so that we can hang them out to dry, but there should be some serious, you can't get every chance to write, of course, but there should be some serious kind of reflection on that, how we came to reach that decision to spend 1.3 million or whatever it was on him, which again, I appreciate is cheap in the scheme of things. You know, bloody hell, Nathan Ellington was a cock up and he cost us 3.25 million 15 years ago, but you know what I mean? So he is cheap, cheap in inverted commas. Not that I've got 1.3 million to chuck around on a footballer, but yeah, it's pretty damning. It's got to be said. You mentioned Emmanuel Dennis there, got 4 minutes this week coming on for Lewis at the end. I think probably not his game to come into, in the sense of defending, backs to the wall, horrible conditions. Rotherham have got a few big boys. Sean Morrison was up from the back and seemed to be getting his nut on everything at that stage. He's probably not the player you want to introduce to see out that win. But at what point, I have to ask, is this loan just a write-off, not fit for purpose? Because, you know, we're a month on from signing him virtually, and we've got kind of cameos out of him and of mixed impact. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, after the Rajovic performance against Rotherham, I think maybe there was an element of punishment for Dennis, or kind of, you know, this is where you stand right now in regards to the Norwich game and so on. But if after that one, if you don't really strongly consider playing Dennis centrally for the last few or the next few games, especially while Bio is out, then he really can't have it. It has to be a bust, because we need help there. We have someone that's capable. He has got quality. You know, he can perform in that position. It seems like a no-brainer to me. I think the fitness thing is one aspect, but he's ready to play some minutes now. And we're at a point where even if he wasn't able to play the whole game for whatever reason, you just got to start someone that's capable of doing something a little bit different. He's there waiting on your doorstep. So if we don't start to see him very, very soon, even this game, I would feel like, then it definitely is a strong indication of where he is valued and how he's valued by the current head coach.
Mm. Perhaps more surprising then the substitution stakes was taking off Ismail Kone. What was the kind of thinking there, if you put yourself in Val's position, and how did that kind of work out with Chak coming on?
I mean, Shaq Fataza was actually good when he came on. I think I really like Shaq Fataza. He gave us some energy when he came on. No complaints about him himself. I think there must have been a concern just for fitness, fatigue. You know, he's been carrying a bit of a calf injury. He almost came off in the last game, so you have to assume it's that, because from a tactical perspective, there's no reason you'd take Koné off. He's so important to us, and he was important in that game as well. No one wanted to take Koné off. I think it would be extremely surprising to find that it was a decision based on, from a tactical perspective. I don't see any chance of that, really. He's just too important for us. If he could play every minute of every game, I'm sure we would have him do so.
Mm. We got two more questions. Sorry, one came in just before we start recording from Nick Lansing at Toast Haiku, and he got it in just in time. It's an interesting question to ask, actually, which is this: can you please explain or justify the criticism of Ismail's roster selections? Maybe I'm too kind, but I think he's dealing with a limited roster and tired players. It's not like he's starting Rajovic over Richarlison or Erling Haaland. Yeah, it's an interesting question, because it's one of the things that's really got people kind of quite uppity, I think, in recent times. And I think, to be honest, Nick's probably, you're probably right. There is a limited kind of roster. That made me pricked my ears up, so to speak, and I looked and realised that you're based in the States, which I hadn't realised. He has got a limited squad. I think there's no getting away with it. I think the big one, obviously, is Tom Delibashiru, isn't it? We were kind of prepared and primed for Sir Alta coming in and being considered a number six this season. But Tom Delibashiru is really the one that kind of makes little sense to a lot of people, and we've done that to death. We saw Tom Ince a little bit, a left back on Saturday, which kind of came, or at least sort of appearing there, which kind of came out of nowhere. But I think, to be honest with you, overarchingly, I don't think he could be doing a lot different. Someone was going to have to deputise or rotate and job share with Andrews while Ngakia was injured, and it's Tom Delibashiru that he's picked upon. And I think, Jordan, you said before, there are some good things that he gives you from that position, even if the kind of defensive side of it isn't one of them. What did you make of Nick's question, Nick's point there?
Yeah, no, I agree. Nick actually might be potentially the closest Watford fan to me. Actually, he's only about a 4-hour drive away from me, which is
only
close by. Yeah, I know. In regards to the criticism, yeah, look, I think it is difficult for him. He does have a small squad. There's lack of options at times. We don't know the full extent of players' health going into games and kind of during the game as much as we'd like to. So, yeah, he is a little bit limited. It depends what the criticism is. Obviously, you know, some might be a little bit more formation or shape based and trying different things. Some might be a situation like you brought up there with Tom Delibashiru and Andrews, where clearly we have a preference of who we'd like to have in there. And you know, he's been asked about that and kind of stated his reason as to why Andrews isn't playing. So, yeah, I think if again, like I kind of touched on earlier, if you're too specific, or if you're really bent out of shape about some of the selection but not factoring in those things, then you're kind of missing a little bit of the real situation, I think. So tough situation for the coach, and then maybe there's been times where players have been available, we've questioned that selection. I think maybe more at the beginning of the season, when our squad was a little fitter, we had a few more options in there. You know, we talk about Reece Healy potentially was one that we were questioning for a while why he's not playing. You know, when we've had both Bio and Rajovic, we've maybe questioned why one or the other's not playing. But right now we're kind of almost bare bones, so it's tough to see the justification at this point of the season where we currently stand, at least.
Absolutely. Final question for today comes from Adam at AYY200. That's a catchy one. Who is about to collect his 10th yellow card, so which centre-backs would you play during his 2-game absence? Also, do you think Tom Delibashiru is improving? I was quite pleased with his game on Saturday personally. And you said something similar about TDB at right back on Saturday earlier, didn't you? At the top of the show, you thought he did all right there on Saturday.
Mm. Yeah, and I think he did okay. Yeah, he was decent. He's not perfect. He's not going to be a perfect fit there. He's kind of filling in. But I'd have to go back and look at him again specifically. But it seemed like one of his better games, if not his best game at right back for us, especially defensively. You know, him exposing you is always the problem there. But he didn't do so against Rotherham. Obviously, you're playing a weaker opposition, but still, he had to withstand some, and he did okay. So I'm feeling better about that situation. What was the first part of the question again?
Who Sorry? Plays centre-back when Hoot gets his inevitable 10th booking?
I mean, you know, right now I'm feeling like Sirianni and Pollock. I think, though, the likelihood is Porteous will be coming in. Porteous
comes back, yeah.
Yeah, I think it seems to be the favourite option. I think at this point my theory is just that Ismail likes the mobility aspect of Porteous. You know, actually, someone, it's just I'm trying to stay on the line of this question, but I did see someone, I can't remember who it was, so I can't give the credit for this, but I saw someone ask, what about Porteous at right back potentially?
Oh yeah,
you know, Craig Cathcart-esque, and we lack a little bit obviously going forwards in that position. We haven't been overly utilising that right back spot when Dele Bashiri has been playing. Obviously there's been some drifting into central positions in midfield and so on from him, but he doesn't get up the line the same way that Andrews does. There's definitely some flexibility in terms of how we operate there, and it wouldn't surprise me if we saw that tried at some point this season, and you know, potentially that might be a way that we find a little bit more comfort in having Porteous in the team. It's not my overall preference in terms of how we kind of have the right back playing. I think Andrews is the better option, but it's an interesting point. But yeah, just to finalise that, I think that the most likely situation is that Porteous comes back in. Most likely it's hard to say, it's probably alongside Pollock, just because he wants to keep Sirianni as that option at number six, but it's really up in the air. I think my personal preference would actually be Sirianni and Pollock, but yeah, what about you?
Yeah, it's one of those ones where, because Hoot has been there all season, it kind of seems like really dramatic that we're probably going to be missing him at some point. I wouldn't have an issue with any of them coming in, really. I think probably on balance it will be Porteous, and actually I'm okay with that, because I think Sirianni and Pollock together, that albeit Hoot is a big chap, I think Sirianni and Pollock together is a particularly slow, immobile recipe for disaster potentially. So actually Porteous, famous last words, might be the better option there. But it just goes to underline, going back to the recruitment piece, how much of an error it's been and how fortunate we've been in Hoot being available for as long as he has been this season. Definitely, we've got on way with that one massively. Final one just from me. Next three up are Huddersfield, Millwall and Swansea. All teams to a greater or lesser degree out of form, struggling, etc. How important are these kind of next three games to build a bit of momentum? What can we kind of take from those three? How important are they?
They're very important. You know, I think from a fan perspective, I think we need to see what we can do differently against these sorts of teams, you know, how we can operate against a team that that we have to look to dominate at certain times, especially at home. That would be the idea, that would be the hope. Huddersfield's a good opportunity to start that. Obviously playing against something different, aren't we, the back three and so on. We haven't played as much. We don't have great success against teams that play in that kind of compact way that Huddersfield are trying to achieve. But you know, they are vital. I feel that it's going to be the best indication of how we can at least try and compete and push ourselves towards the top end of that of the top half of the table, and maybe push towards playoffs a little bit if possible. Because we have to play lots of teams that we do need to have occasions where we do dominate. You know, as I said before, we don't have a lot of time. We are ahead of games. We're often finding ourselves in that position to chase, and that's when I question if we have that gear to step up into and find ways to break these teams down. So if we've got a little bit of a run there to you know, maybe try something different and see what we can work out and find, then hopefully we get something positive to take from it. But the question is whether we can or not, or whether we even have the availability of the personnel we need to allow us to do so. I'm very curious to see. I'm quite intrigued.
Yeah.
What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I think they're huge in their own way. If you take them as a collective, you know, that we're only 7 points off the playoffs at the moment. I don't think we're going to get there. Mm. But I look back to the Sean Dyche season. You know, we kind of didn't start very well and made a few signings. We got there. And by the end, we hit our stride with, you know, 10 games or so to go. I think Troy was scoring quite frequently from memory, got a few kind of decent results. And there was a real kind of brief flirtation with the idea we might get in the playoffs. And to be honest with you, even if we fall short and finish exactly where we are now, but we flirt with it, I think that just keeps the intrigue and among the supporters, you know, got something to buy into and something to believe in.
So yeah, I think getting points from those three is going to be and they're all scrapping for their lives at the bottom there, particularly obviously Huddersfield and Millwall. So it's going to be more important to them than it is to us. But we should be, there's still 13 games to go. So whatever that is, just over a third of the season. No.
Well, Huddersfield are a weird one too, because they've been draw, win, loss. So they're in a bit of a strange run.
Yeah.
Millwall obviously had a really bad, and they lost four in a row.
Yeah.
But you have to remember too, in regards to the Rotherham game, that was our first win in five, wasn't it? So hopefully that can at least give us something of a cliche, but something of a platform to build off the next few games at least. Maybe a little bit of extra confidence going into this one. If we came out of this next one of three with 7 points, you feel a little bit differently about this team, perhaps.
Brilliant, Jordan. Thank you. Let's wrap it up there. Thank you very much to everyone that has sent in questions for this week's show. Send them in any time. You don't have to wait for us to send out a request to them. We will always try and cover as many of them as possible. We do enjoy that interaction. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. It's at WatfordPod. At Jordan Weimer, at TB Bodell, and at Messi Messiano. Take it easy, and we will speak to you after the Huddersfield game.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.